Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 18th day of January, Anno Domini 2020. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Those of you who are waiting for the YouTube don't know this because you can't hear me, but it's not quite up yet. Steve's setting it up even as we speak.
The expressways are getting very slow. At least the plows are out, and that's one of the reasons they're very slow.
Yeah, right. All right, so the National Security Agency, God bless them, recently discovered a major flaw in Microsoft's Windows operating system. One that could expose computer users to significant breaches, surveillance, or disruption, and actually alerted Microsoft about the problem rather than turning it into a hacking weapon, which is what they usually do. The public disclosure represents a major shift in the NSA's approach, choosing to put computer security ahead of building up its arsenal of hacking tools that allow the agency to spy on adversaries' networks. Cybersecurity professionals hailed the move. The bug, essentially a mistake in the computer code, affects the Windows 10 operating system, the most widely used in government and business today. Microsoft issued a patch for the flaw on Tuesday. So customers who have already applied the update or have automatic updates enabled are already protected. If not, of course, install all the security updates as soon as possible. Whatever else you do or don't update, update the security for Pete's sake. The flaw the NSA recently uncovered would be useful to hackers seeking to break into some computers running Windows 10. When a Windows user logs onto a website, the user's browser checks the authenticity of the site through software provided by Microsoft. The NSA discovered an error in the software code that fails to properly check the authenticity. Once again, we see that Microsoft quality assurance is in the toilet. Microsoft and the NSA reported that they have seen no active exploitation of the flaw. If the flaw is patched quickly, it's not that dangerous. If a lot of people don't patch, it could be a disaster. But we've just started to see exploits pop up, so you haven't updated yet. You really, really should. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is serious Win 10 security bug patched? And your choices are, I've already updated, I'm updating now, no update for Win 10. Going commando, baby. Windows? Still? Seriously? And, of course, other. And if you picked other, please leave your comments in the poll discussion. So far, we've got 58 votes, and the massive majority of you have already updated. I know you'll have more to say about this, so if you scroll down on the right... if you go to our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, and scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, you'll see the poll, you'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion, and so far at least, the first item under poll discussion is 18 Jan 20, Sirius Win 10 security bug patched, and so far there's just me there. But what I'm reminding you of, it's so serious that the NSA actually got Microsoft to fix it rather than exploiting it themselves. In addition, you will on the web find multiple reports as to whether or not this bug also affects Windows 7. And the reason you'll find conflicting reports is that there are multiple versions of the Crypt32 DLL used in Windows 7. Most of them are vulnerable in some way. And some are not. So it's a complete crapshoot as to whether or not you're protected under Windows 7. And, of course, there is no update for Windows 7. And, of course, it is rarely true that one version of a DLL will work in a different operating system with a different version of the DLL. So if you're still running Windows 7, you're flapping in the wind. But you knew that, and you made that decision consciously. But for you Windows 10 people, if you haven't run the current updates, at least run the security update, because this is we are now seeing active exploits, and it's a pretty serious thing. And of course, if you want to talk about that or dang near anything at all having to do with computers, at least give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And of course, if you go to our website at soundbites.org, bites with a Y, you will see that you can all, you see those numbers there. You'll also see that you can text us at 585-209-9010. The problem with texting us is two things. First, text comes to come to Dave, and Dave is actually sometimes quite busy at the board. And in addition to that, people tend to be very terse in texts, and we don't often get the information we need to answer your question. Yeah. So and calling that, in would be better, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415.
Because we need to know more particulars.
Right.
What computer you're on, what OS you're on.
Yeah.
And sometimes we get someone's life story in five consecutive tweets, and we don't need the whole life story, just what happened recently.
I was born in a small log cabin.
Things went downhill from there.
Yeah. was that Les Nesmith?
Yeah.
From WKRP in Cincinnati? Yep. As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
And wild turkeys can.
Right. But at any rate, as we've seen over and over and over and over and over and over, Microsoft's quality assurance group, the QA group, is dead, just simply dead. It used to be that Microsoft had rooms full of all kinds of computers and all kinds of configurations, pretty much every computer type, every peripheral type that you could possibly have in those things. And they actually did rigorous and serious testing of those things back then. But now, yeah, not so much. Now they just have essentially a
bot,
virtual machines. They have a series of virtual machines that are all identical, and by a series of virtual machines, I mean a few, comparatively very few, that they test against. And if you're not exactly that virtual machine, then nobody's guaranteeing anything anymore. And it's just the way the world works. And if you're still running Windows, that's what you live with. All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Bob from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Hi, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
I bought myself a gift for Christmas or for the new year, a Chromebook.
Nice.
And it comes, or what came in it was the 32-bit version of Chrome.
Yep.
So I know there's a 64-bit.
Yep.
And I tried to get it, but I can't.
Nope. And the reason for that would be that whatever processor you're using and whatever motherboard it's on will only do 32-bit.
That's surprising because I looked up the specs and it says it's a 64-bit machine.
How much memory does the computer have in it?
4 gigs.
So it doesn't need any more than 32-bit.
Right. But right. The version of Chrome OS that you're using in terms of the bit width, the bit size, 32 or 64-bit, is relatively unimportant. It's important if you're doing very high-end mathematical calculations, or if you've got more than 4 gigs of RAM. because you want to be able to address that, and that requires 64 bits. But for 34, 4 gig of RAM, you're really only going to be able to access, for 32-bit, you're only going to access 4 gigs anyway. It's actually 3.8, I think it is. You're fine as it stands. You're fine. All the same programs run. They do all the same things. They might be a little bit slower, but not really noticeably slower. That will have a lot more to do with the clock rate on your chips than it will with the 32 versus 64 bit.
I wonder if they do it for cost, keeps the cost down.
In terms of the hardware, yes, absolutely. Obviously, the Chrome OS is essentially an open source product, so it's free. So in that case, it doesn't matter if it's 32 or 64 bit. But if you've only got 4 gig of RAM, you don't need the 64-bit version. And there are those who will say that because you only have 4 gigs of RAM, why not save the space in 64-bit? Everything you do in 64-bit is, well, twice as wide as everything you do in 32-bit. So why not save the space and only run 32 bits?
Okay, so that would also play into another question of... LibreOffice, I would need the 32-bit version of that versus 64.
Right, but if you're installing it, if you're installing that in the Linux subsystem, when you do an sudo apt install LibreOffice, it knows what version to install automatically. Again, unless you're doing very high-end calculation in the spreadsheet or in the math package. 32 versus 64-bit is not really an issue.
Because when I did install LibreOffice, but it's version 5, and I know they're all the way up to 6.3.
Is that what came with, did you install it inside Linux, or did you add it separately?
No, I installed it inside the Linux compartment, they call it.
Right. Most of the 6 update is not, as I remember, super important. I think they're up to 6.2. Is that what it is?
6.3.4, I think it is.
Okay. For 90% of what people do, 5 will be fine. You can do an update. I'm just looking at... Bless you, my son.
Thank you.
They still do offer a 32-bit and 64-bit version, so I was thinking maybe they don't do 32-bit anymore.
Right. Let's see.
I know they do it, or the previous one, 6.2, a 32-bit.
Yeah, this is 5.2. What? It's 5.2/-deb. So Debian numbers their stuff differently, but it probably is 5.2. Again, 99% of what you will do will be fine in this. They've made a few, I'm not sure what the release notes will say, but generally what they do is performance improvements and stuff like that. And honestly, you're not going to see those on 32-bit Chromebook anyway. I wouldn't get terribly excited about numbers. In terms of bit width and versioning, unless there's an actual issue with 5.2.7, I think it said, -1. Unless there's an actual issue with that version and they update that, you should be able to run everything you need to run.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. For example, I'm running on my Chromebook Thunderbird, and it's a version behind, but there's nothing in it that I need from the new version.
Okay.
You know, that's really and I get everybody wants the latest version. We see a number and we start to shake, but the reality is that if it does everything you want it to do, the number, unless it's a security issue, the number is not important.
Actually, it's more like what it looks like on the screen.
Well, right. There's a slight difference there as well.
But I was just thinking, I probably could go into the themes and change it maybe the way I want it.
Probably.
I'll get to play with that this afternoon.
Yay!
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I suppose if he didn't buy it that long ago, he checked the return policy and he could return it for 64-bit if he really wanted to.
Right.
And then going back to the news story, if you really, really want to have the bleeding edge versions of Windows, you can become a beta tester.
Yeah, already a beta tester. You can become an alpha tester.
Yeah, they call it the Windows Insider Program. You get early builds. So you know they're going to crash, but you get early builds.
What difference does it make? It crashes when,
yeah,
when they bring it out.
Well, the problem is if you're an insider, you're supposed to document crashes and reproduce them before you send them in. You're being a beta tester, and that means things will break. Whether you like it or not, they will break. That's the point of beta testing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people I know do beta testing on separate machines. So when they crash, they do a reinstall.
A wipe and reinstall.
Wipe and reinstall. Yeah. Then they recreate the steps they just took. It's a long and involved process. But real beta testers are, A, very good at their jobs. And B, the people who really keep us from having the same problems they're having. Although nowadays, clearly Microsoft doesn't have any internal beta testers.
Yeah.
And we're it. So.
Yes, they do. The internal world.
Right.
I was always good at breaking other people's code. So they always, in college, everyone had me look at their program.
Yeah.
What you want a number? What happens if I type in a letter?
Crash.
Dave Ballard does the same thing at RIT. We used to have people say, don't give this to Dave. Do not give this to Dave.
Interesting thing, talk about backups.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that I do such redundant stuff.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. I'm up in the ham room.
Yeah.
And as I told you, I had that old Windows 7 machine.
For those of you who don't know, Dave smokes his own hams.
Yep. Depends on what end you light.
Yeah, right.
But,
we're going to have to pause a minute while everyone climbs back up off the floor.
Yeah.
Especially Dave.
Okay, so you're up in the ham room. He used himself.
Yeah.
It's easy at my age. The simpler things in life.
Ten minutes from now, he'll tell the same joke and not remember.
I did tell that already?
Yeah.
No, I'm working along on the 7 machine, which does not go on the internet, folks. So I was just using it, and all of a sudden, I was going to do an update to this one program that I run. So I shut it down, goes to startup.
Uh-huh.
Goes to startup. Ain't starting up. It's done. It's gone. And it's like, oh, shoot. But I go, oh, wait a minute. I got everything else that was on that I was doing just 3 hours earlier over the weekend. I had already backed all that other stuff up just in case. Because I love to do the weekly backups. You know, anything that's changed, boom. It doesn't take that long.
Right.
Because 90% of the files that I hit backup, it just checks to make sure whether there's a newer version. So it doesn't take that long, folks. And bam, I had it up there. So all those folders now, even stuff on my desktop.
Yep.
No problem. It's already there. So now I've got another machine coming. I'm going to load that up. And all I got to do is drag all the stuff from my backup back over for my desktop because they're just files. The programs, yes. As I've told folks before, don't worry about backing up programs because those you usually have to reinstall anyways on any operating system.
Because of the registry.
Yep. It's always the data, whether it be, you know, files or, you know, as far as information input and everything else and that. Those are the things you want to always back up and focus on. And it's even made me cautious, got me thinking now, I think I'm going to get another drive because I've got my old server. And that server, that thing's got to be cranking over 15 years old.
Miska.
It's just sits down in the basement. It's cool. But again, you know, I got backups of that, but I'm thinking of replacing that with an external, like Buffalo drive or that type of thing. Yep. Put a terabyte hard drive in there, and that machine drops dead. Okay, no biggie, no foul, no harm, no foul.
I have an external drive that backs up all my documents, all my pictures, all my audio, all my video, all of that stuff. The only thing I don't back up is my temp directory because it's temporary.
Yep.
You better not be putting anything in there you want to keep.
But what else was nice, too, is a lot of my documents and everything else, I go, oh, wait a minute, I don't have to worry about that. That's up on the cloud.
Yep.
As far as all my emails and my spreadsheets and some documents that I've recently done over the past few months, it's like, oh, that's a non-issue because it's already up on the cloud. I just go there for them. And I've just gotten a habit. It's so reassuring. Back in the day, if you had a machine, you know, before Google Mail and all this other stuff, oh, you had to back those up into that, go bury yourself down into the directory, wherever, whatever email program you were using, copy it, pull it out. And then when you went to set it back up, you had to make sure you had that right directions of where it was going.
Right.
To set it back up and paste it back in there. With Google, I mean, it's just there. I don't even have to think about it.
One of the things that I have also realized recently is that I don't use most of my backups as much as I used to. Because every night, I rsync to all my backups. Rsync is similar to the program you're using. It only backs up the changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes no time at all.
Yeah.
But I rsync everything. But most things are already somewhere in Google. And I back those up. I download those and back those up to all my places quite regularly. There's something called Takeout, takeout.google.com. And you can download all your email or all your documents or all your pictures or whatever you want to download into zip files and put them on your own systems. But because so much of my stuff is now up in the cloud, I don't really worry anymore. And I really am not exercising my external drives the way I used to.
Well, one other thing is, matter of fact, it came up, I had a meeting to go to for the HAM group here in Rochester, board meeting, and they're talking about, you know, backing up the photos, and they don't want to pay for storage. I go, well, why not put them back up on Google Photo? Uh-huh. It's free. Well, how many can you put up there? And I told them roughly I had about 40,000 photos. I was wrong. I have 42.
Yeah. I got 50,000. I've had 50,000, and I don't know how many more I've got now.
Well, a lot of them I backed up for my wife. My wife loves photography, and she goes around and does photography for grave sites. So I've been backing them all up for her. And we've got over 42,000 files up there, along with my stuff. And I don't pay a penny for any of it.
Right. As long as you save it in Google's format, you're good to go. And yeah, I've got pictures from the 70s.
Yeah, same here. All my woodworking and everything else it's up there.
It's all up there, and it's good. I've, you know, mail and pictures and audio and video and everything is up there. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina, Francesco, and you. 30 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites, member supported. Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Ernesto from Parenton, New York on the line. Hi, Ernesto. What's up?
Yeah, I listened to your program briefly, and you mentioned that the Windows update, you could probably lose things, you know, because my machines are like, I built on 2011, and I've been updating regularly, no problems, but does if you do a Windows update, will with a trash, whatever you've had there, number one. Number two, can restore, return everything back? And
well,
in terms of backup, should you back up the whole drive and on a regular basis, you know, before these updates? Because it's a lot of work there.
It is a lot of work. So here's the deal. Are you on Windows 10 or Windows 7?
10.
Okay. If your machine is fairly old, you should be backing up regularly anyway because hardware dies. That's a simple fact. Hardware dies. So let's take the second level of that. You've got a fairly old machine with a fairly new operating system, and you want to do an update. As we have seen over the last, year and a half plus, Microsoft's updates generally, what's the word I'm looking for? Suck.
So it doesn't lose your data on purpose.
Right.
It's an accident.
It's an accident.
That's what they claim.
But here's the deal. Anytime you should be backing up daily all of your information. And as Dave said, that doesn't take long if you perform the right kind of backup. It only backs up the new stuff. So that doesn't take long at all, and you should be doing that every single day. As for backing up the whole system, my suggestion is for Windows 10, and I didn't used to suggest this, but considering how horrible their updates have been, my suggestion is that you do a complete backup of your system using a product like Clonezilla before any major Windows update.
What is it? Clonezilla?
Clonezilla is one of the programs that you should be looking at. And last week at soundbites.org, we published a link to a program, a web page that I create. What just happened here? Oh, I see. I misspelled it. That's what happened.
You can go to weird places by misspelling things.
Oh, can you? Yes, you can. Anyway, at soundbites.org, right now it's the fifth thing on the list. It says backing up - ask Nick. And if you click on that, you'll see that it will take you to a link of a web page I created that talks about every operating system and backup programs for it and what they cost or if they're free or whatever.
And Clonezilla is a slightly different kind of backup where it makes a full clone of your drive. So it's an identical bit-for-bit copy. And quite frequently, a clone is faster to do because it can do blocks of data. It doesn't have to do a file-by-file copy. So and so by having a clone, if there's a problem during your Windows upgrade, you can just copy your clone back rather than needing to reinstall Windows, reinstall your apps, and then restore your data from backup.
Right.
So having a backup and a clone both are also pretty good tips, too.
Oh, okay. You can do that to an external, the Clonezilla to an external drive or right on the right on your machine.
Definitely to an external device.
Yeah, because the other thing that backup gets you is when your hard drive fails, you have another hard drive with your data on it.
Okay. Does restore help if something happens during an update?
Sometimes.
Windows restore itself sometimes.
It depends on how bad the mistake was that the update made, if restore can bring it back.
Okay, so try to do the Clonezilla periodically, and restore, you can't depend on that too much then.
Right.
Right. You want to be able to back up everything every day, which means you want something that does automatic scheduling and all of that stuff.
Okay.
Because you never know when your drive is going to die.
Right.
Or you might accidentally delete a file and then tomorrow would say, oh, I need that back again.
And you might say, oh, I'll do it myself every day, but you know you won't. So you automate it so the computer does it every day.
Okay.
Got it?
Okay. Yeah. So So this Windows update can wipe out whatever you have.
Oh, yes, because it depends on the update, of course. If it's doing an update deep into the registry or deep into the bootable files and it screws up, you've lost your system.
There was a bug, was it last year, where it made a new user folder and then copied your data to it and then deleted the temp folder. Well, the bug was it forgot to copy your data before it deleted the temp folder that had all your data in it.
So it deleted everybody's data.
Yeah.
Kind of bricked the machine.
You better have a backup if you want your stuff.
It's still booted okay, no user data. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so you want to have a backup all the time, especially before you install an update. Or even before you install a new program, because sometimes those program installers can mess up.
Right, depending on where you got the program from, you're at the mercy of the programmers of that product, right? And so if they're screw-ups, your system can die just from installing somebody's program.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so you want to make sure you have backups. The number one thing everybody should be doing is backing up all the time.
And I like the number one statement you have on that page is you don't have enough backups.
That's exactly right. Yep. You do not have enough backups. I don't care how many you have. You don't have enough.
Each backup has to have its own title, or you can just back up to the previous, or what?
Well, you want to put it in different places. You don't want them all in the same place.
That's two questions. So each backup program, when it does its incremental backup, it will save it onto the disk you were using as a new folder, basically. But it's also convenient to have, say, two backup drives or three backup drives, so you have multiple copies, and you want to take one of those off-site, or you can pay for a cloud backup service, so you have an off-site backup in case there's a fire, flood, theft in your house. Your computer and your backup drive sitting right next to it could be lost.
Right. Something like Carbonite will back up to the web for you.
And about $5 a month for that.
What did you say just now?
Carbonite, which is one of the programs, it's the second program down in my Windows list. Carbonite backs up to the web, to the internet, so that even if you have a catastrophic event in your home, your data are up there safe. You buy a new machine, you use Carbonite to move everything back down, and all your data are there.
Okay.
I kind of like Backblaze. I like the little fire icon.
Yeah.
So try to get Clonezilla and maybe Carbonite?
Certainly both of those together would be excellent.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot for the advice, guys.
Thanks. Sure. Good luck. Have fun.
Thank you. Bye.
Yep. And as Steve said, in the Mac side, Backblaze does that. So does Carbonite.
So does Carbonite, yeah.
And that's available for the Clonezilla also works on a Mac.
And the built-in Time Machine program is good enough to start with for most people.
Right.
We joke that the Windows backup program works pretty good, but the Restore program, not so much.
Not so much.
But, I finally found my Google dashboard for my photos. I have 146,035 photos on Google.
Nice.
For free.
And they're all free.
Yep.
As long as you use it, save it in their format.
Yeah, and it's a good quality. I mean.
Yeah, it's high enough. It's certainly enough for the web. And where do people look at their pictures nowadays? On their phones.
Or on their computer.
And it's excellent for that. Mm-hmm. It's not, if you're a photographer, it's not good enough for you. But for everybody else, it's more than adequate. And it's all free. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. What's up, Gary?
Hi. I'm a frequent caller, and I'll try to keep it brief. I'm, and I'll give you a little background in what I've done and what my question is. I have a fairly new computer. It's 8 months old. It's a Lenovo ThinkPad, and I'm running Windows 10. Version 1909. It's a 4-core with 8 gigabytes of RAM, and it's running well. And I'm having again a problem with Mozilla Thunderbird. Since the 9th of this month, I haven't been able to get my email in Thunderbird. I I use Yahoo, which I know you don't like, but I did, and Frontier is my ISP, and I'm getting the internet, and when I called Frontier, and they showed me how to get my email on web-based email, which, of course, I don't like because it's so unstable and so open.
And so full of ads.
Oh, God, it's horrible. And they're so hard to get rid of, and you can't dump them in a trash bin. At any rate, they suggested that Yahoo, that I get a hold of Yahoo's support. And as you probably know, they don't have phone support. But I did a little research and found out that Yahoo has eliminated some of their platforms. But it doesn't make sense to me that they would have eliminated a platform and it still, I can still get email on the web base. So that doesn't seem to be the problem. The other thing I tried to check is I'm open now. I have the computer on, and I'm open to settings and to updates. And I have downloaded all the updates from Microsoft. And a friend of mine who knows a lot more about computers than I do, he doesn't know what you know, but he said that it's possible that one of the updates needs a new driver from Yahoo to be able to use it correctly. I've also opened to the help page of Thunderbird, and one of the first things they suggest is reconfiguring it. And the reason I'm calling is I just wonder if this is a problem you've run into before, or I use Thunderbird for years and do like it because it's fairly secure. It does seem to have a lot of filters, and the spam filter works really well. Do you have any suggestions from here about something I might try?
Yes. First, if you're going to stick with Frontier as your email provider, you may continue to have these problems.
Yeah.
The first thing you need to do is check the configuration in Thunderbird. Because Frontier has now moved to Yahoo, you may need to make some changes. There are Mozilla has a support page for Thunderbird and Yahoo specifically.
Oh, it does. Okay.
And we're going to post a link to that.
Okay, good.
Now, you have two choices there, POP and IMAP.
Right.
Preferably,
I have IMAP.
Yeah, you should be using IMAP.
Yeah, that's what I have.
The trick is that if you use Frontier's server, it only works with POP.
Oh.
You have to use Yahoo's server to be IMAP.
Right.
So now, you have to make sure what server settings are you're using on your computer.
Right. So for the IMAP server settings for Yahoo Mail, you would use all of those settings except the username and password would be your Frontier username and password.
Huh.
So it's, you know, you@frontiernet.net and then whatever that password is and all the rest of it. But you can see all that on the Yahoo IMAP server settings for Yahoo Mail.
Okay, so I should set it for IMAP, is it?
Well, but IMAP@yahoo.com, not... the IMAP server, which is imap.mail.yahoo.com, as opposed to the frontiernet.net.
POP3.frontiernet.net.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you want to set it, follow the instructions that Steve is about to post. But when it comes down to the email address, make sure it is your Frontier email address, the whole thing, your name at frontiernet.net or whatever it is. And that password specifically, yeah.
Now, are you getting an error message at all when you try to get your mail?
No, I'm not.
That's very unusual.
That is odd.
It's probably in a log file somewhere that you'd have to go find.
Right. But at any rate, try that. That should do it. As for everything else, certainly you've got a fast enough machine. You've got enough RAM. It's none of that stuff.
Right.
Ooh, security. You might have to enable less secure options.
It shouldn't matter for email, should it?
occasionally, it depends on what level of security. Does Thunderbird do TLS or does it do 1.1 or TLS 1.2?
It does all of whatever is needed. It does. Okay. You should have no trouble with that.
Because we've run into issues if you're using an older mail client, you have to downgrade your security on the mail server so the older client can get in.
Right, but this shouldn't be a problem if he's got an updated version of Thunderbird.
Yeah,
I do. I do all the updates on good. Thunderbird.
Good. Then yes, when you set it up, it'll say it requires SSL. It'll tell you what ports to use the whole routine. So you shouldn't have any trouble from there on. So try working with those pages. The one page that Steve is leading you to has links for both POP and IMAP. You want the IMAP link.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll give it a try and I'll hope for the best. Usually these help pages are very clear, sometimes I have to stumble through it, but I can usually get it. So,
right.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Bye.
And we frequently have problems with Frontier Yahoo Mail because of the back end and the front end and the forwarding between Frontier and Yahoo. And
the usual
recommendation is to switch to Gmail.
Switch to Gmail or Apple Mail or Microsoft Mail or... You know, something that is not dependent on your internet service provider. I don't care who your internet service provider is, because if at some point you decide to change your internet service provider, then you are going to want to change your email as well, because the old email will go away. So if you get off of any internet service provider, you should do that soon, because it's better to get through that pain early and quickly.
It's worse than changing your postal address.
Boy, ain't that the truth. Yeah. You should also be able to, once you have established a new email address, you should be able to forward all your mail from Yahoo to the new address, and that should be good too.
And then tell all the people you communicate with frequently that this is my new address.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Vic from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Vic. What's up?
Hi, guys. I've been using Carbonite for years and years, and I've been very pleased with it. I had a problem, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and they actually, you can actually talk to a human, and they will actually take over your computer and take care of whatever problem you have.
Yeah, make sure you're calling Carbonite, but yes, yes.
Yeah, that's one of the features. It was worth the money. I just want to let you guys know that it's nice to have someone you can actually talk to versus playing email tag back and forth with a lot of other things, so I just thought I'd throw it out.
Yep, good idea. Thank you, Vic. Okay. Good point. And as Steve said, it's $5 a month.
Generally.
Generally.
Per computer.
Right, per computer. And think about what it would cost you to get back your stuff. And much of it is priceless. Your pictures. You can't go back and reset up the birth of your children. Most of it.
You just got to have another kid.
Just going to have another kid. but in general, you know, those are priceless, and you should be very careful about how you handle them. If you don't have backups, and I'm very serious about this, if you don't have backups, every night as you go to bed, you should be hearing in the back of your mind, tick, 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 because something's going to blow up soon.
It's not a matter of if, it's when.
Your hard drive will die. You will lose all the photos. Your spouse will be extremely upset with you.
What it takes, really, for a lot of folks, I'd say over 90% of the people out there, is to lose a bunch of data.
Yep.
And then have to recreate it.
And like we said, you can't recreate the pictures.
No. Once it's gone, it's gone. And you know what, folks? You got to live with it because, you know, sure, well, I can't live without it. Well, you know what? You're going to have to learn to because you didn't have the time then to, do it. It couldn't have been too important.
Buy the $100 backup drive to save yourself thousands of dollars of aggravation later.
Oh, and
look, it takes setting it up takes under an hour, often 10 minutes. But I'll say under an hour because maybe you're going to stop and have a cup of coffee. But once that's done, if you got the right thing and it's automated,
yep,
then you never have to think about it again, and yet everything is being backed up all the time. I do that, like I said, my system is fully backed up constantly in multiple places, and I don't even think about it. It's just happening every single day.
Yep.
All right, we got some text questions
Well, and one last thing. Look at your backup every now and then to make sure it's working. Right. We had a customer come in this week with a bad hard drive, and he said, I think I'm backing up. I don't know. Okay, that's better than not having than knowing you're not, I guess. Turns out he was, which was good, but yeah.
All right, we got one listener that texted in. IMP will work with FTR/Yahoo, but they won't provide support for it. They probably won't provide client support anymore either.
Okay, I'm not sure I know what IMP is. Internet Messaging Protocol? Sure.
Yep.
Sure. And FTR must be Frontier.
Yep.
See, this is, you know, it's all in code. I think the Bosch is...
Somebody else says
rating at midnight.
Yeah.
But yes, there is no support. But even so, and that's just another good reason to get off it.
Yep.
Go to someplace like Google or any one of the a lot of people go into GMX, but there's no security on GMX.
Yep.
Proton Mail, if you want super security.
Right. But you can do this, and I would suggest moving off of Frontier Yahoo.
Yeah, definitely, especially Yahoo with all the holes in that in it. And it says Cloudzilla can back up byte by byte, but more usually it just goes file by file. Its strength is that Windows isn't running when it does this, so all the Windows files that would be in use with the system running are fully accessible, much less time to restore it if it's file by file.
Yeah, Windows backup can't back up Windows. And that's sort of the point.
No backup program can back up a running program. So Windows is running when you're running Windows backup, so it cannot back up Windows fully. Sorry.
And so that's why with Clonezilla and a lot of the other companies, you boot another disk to back up your OS. But in many cases, you don't need to back up your OS, just back up your data, because you want to reinstall a clean OS anyway when there's a problem.
Right. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away, because we've got a whole nother hour coming up of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow! That must mean you're listening to Sound Bites with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and we will be back with a whole nother hour of this stuff after a slightly longer break. Take a bio break. I know I will. And we'll be back with more Sound Bites on Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Sound Bites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Steve from Kendall, New York on the line. What's up, Steve?
This is a question that I haven't looked at your website been a long time. What does clicking or how do you get what is
follows the square brackets with three dots in the middle.
Oh, on the Soundbites website, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What Steve is talking about is that many of the stuff that you see here, you do not see the whole text. You see only part of it, and then there's square brackets with an ellipsis in the middle.
Meaning there's more to show.
There's more to show, yeah. And the way you get to it is by clicking on the title.
The title, not the end?
Right, right. You click on the title itself. That's only showing you that what's down below is just a sample part of what you'll see in the thing itself. And so you can see when you click on the title, you get to another page that shows you the title, the text itself, and then if there's a link underneath that, it'll say source with the link, and then you click on that link to go to the place.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's easy when you know... You know the secret.
I'm just now noticing that the links aren't blue.
Yeah, they're brown.
No, they're on my machine. There's no color at all.
Oh, you mean for the
to tell you
title?
That,
yeah,
to
yeah,
tell
yeah,
you
yeah.
that it's a link.
Yeah.
Is that a setting somewhere?
Maybe. I'll look and see. But if you click on the link itself, you'll see that it
is a link. The cursor changes to a. To
but
a,
the links down below are brown, not blue.
Yeah,
because that's the
brown and orange. Themes,
that's the color
the theme. Yeah,
yeah, brown and orange because that's the colors of the radio in the logo.
Yep.
Although the name isn't blue, so I suppose.
And if you happen to have a small screen, you may not know there's a Soundbites logo in the upper left corner.
Yeah.
So you're going to make your window a lot wider, and then you can see it.
Yeah, I left it not terribly wide because not terribly big because I thought the information we provide is more important than a visual image. Or I would have just plastered the three of us right across the front.
Ew. Put a little icon on the top there.
Yeah. But yeah, so... yes, and that is one of the tricks that you got to know to properly navigate the site. There are a few of them, but there are a few of them. So yeah, I get it. While you give us a call, I will read another news item if I can reach it. I've got it strewn all over the place here. Oh yeah. On Wednesday, Google updated its iOS Smart Lock app with a feature that essentially replaces a physical security key with your actual phone. Android phones have had this feature for months, but now iPhone owners can use it too.
For Google services.
For Google services.
It's had it for Apple services.
Right. Now it's added Google. The update notes for the new version of the Smart Lock app read, "With this new update, you can now set your phone's built-in security key, the best second-factor protection for your Google account. What this means is that when you log into your Google accounts, you can confirm that it's you via your iPhone without the use of a two-factor text message or anything like that. In order to make this work, the Smart Lock runs on the Secure Enclave, which is that separate processor inside most iPhones that handles biometric information such as your fingerprint or your face. Previously, if you wanted to securely log into your Google accounts with a device, you'd need to use a physical key or an Android phone. It seems that so far this only works when you're trying to log in via the Chrome browser. But it does work. Yeah, it works pretty much like two-factor authentication, only without you having to receive a text message. When you log into Google on another device, you will receive a notification on your iPhone. You then hit a button within the Smart Lock app, confirming that, yes, this is you trying to log in. And voila! If it isn't you, you can cancel the login just as easily. Your phone has to have Bluetooth enabled for it to work, but it's otherwise a convenience. This means that iPhone users can now be part of Google's Advanced Protection Program, the company's security for those who are at significant risk of a breach online, such as journalists and politicians, without having to purchase separate security keys. Still, it won't do much to protect your account if the person trying to log in also has access to your phone, but it's still an upgrade. So how do you secure your logins? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Because it's nice to have that second factor, but text messaging can be... usurped.
Yep.
There are text hacking procedures or SIM cloning, and that's how a lot of accounts have been broken into by targeting a specific person. And the SIM cloning is always an interesting hack, social engineering hack. Someone calls up Verizon, says, you know, hi, my name is Dave, and I've lost my phone. Can you send me a new SIM card? And they go, okay, here. And now suddenly your phone number is being used by somebody else, and they can read every text message you get.
Right. Right. That's one of the reasons that I set up my – I won't say which of them, but I have multiple Google numbers, and it's actually set up to one of those. So
cool.
I get it through that, and that makes it much easier.
So I'm going to have to go change all my Google accounts to now use the authenticator.
Yeah.
Well, I love...
Is that me or was that you?
What's that noise?
Somebody's Google answered them.
Oh, that was me. Sorry. I had my... I usually leave my audio off, but I had it on because I was listening to some music earlier. Sorry, that was me. I'm good now, I think. Pretty sure, yeah. Sorry, yeah. When we use the...
We're professionals.
The trigger word. There's a whole bunch of words, phrases that will trigger... Google, most of them sound like the word hey followed by the word Google. I'm trying to separate them enough.
Yeah.
One of them is hey followed by the words boo-boo. So if you're pretending to be Yogi Bear.
Hey, if you remember who Yogi Bear is.
If you're old enough to remember who Yogi Bear is, you can do that. There's a bunch of others. But right now you can't rename it, which saddens me. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
It is so far.
Well, you haven't talked to me yet.
Exactly.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
So I am going to ask you two questions, if I may. One for a friend. I'll get that out of the way.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
He is having difficulty updating Firefox. Every time he tries to do an update, it says it hasn't updated. I have suggested he uninstall and reinstall, but he doesn't want to go that way. Is there anything that you can suggest that he might try?
What operating system?
Windows 10.
Nope. Nothing else I can suggest. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Does it say why it can't update?
No, it doesn't.
Move to Google.
Yeah.
Well, so, yeah,
and move to Chrome. But if you want, at this point, what it sounds like has happened is that something has gotten corrupted, either in one of the directories that Firefox uses, or more likely, quite honestly, in the registry.
So
My suggestion would be to completely purge Firefox from his system, uninstall it completely.
That's where I'm going. Reboot.
Reboot, run Revo uninstaller to clean up his registry, then install Firefox.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he wants to, he can save all of his bookmarks.
Right. He's done that before, supposedly followed the instructions, lost all his bookmarks. So he doesn't trust that anymore. That's the reason he doesn't want to do it.
Okay. If you follow the instructions, it works.
Yeah.
And then when you reinstall Firefox, you have to restore your bookmarks or re-import your bookmarks.
But that's actually easier because then you just point it to wherever you saved that file. And
right, that could be the key. He has to remember where he saved the file to.
That's right.
he could do a search on the hard drive.
That's true, and he
then has to remember what he named it.
Ransack to find things. So
most folks accept the default.
Yeah.
So
I tell people start it with the date, 2021.
Oh yeah, good idea. I haven't thought of that one.
18, right? So that way you know that if you've saved multiple versions, you know which version it is.
Mm-hmm.
But also that way you know you're searching for something you did in 2020.
Right. Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a plan, and Steve's going to put a link to the Firefox bookmark update, how to save it to an HTML file.
I am going to get more credibility because you're telling him to do what I told him to do. So,
but just tell him we said Steve is always right.
That's true. What can I say? We have a saying: I know everything that's not on the internet. If it's on the internet, I'm not responsible for it.
Exactly.
And if it's not on the internet, you can't check me.
That's right. That's right.
Go ahead.
So yeah, have that person just go to our website. Steve's putting that up now. Have him go to the website and he'll be able to follow those instructions pretty clearly.
Yeah, that sounds very good. So my other question is Windows XP.
That's not a question. That's ancient history.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to turn into a question.
Okay.
Windows XP will not allow me to go to certain sites. Like, there's a writing group, Lilac City, LCRWriters.org.
Yeah.
And it won't let me go there. I can do it on another XP machine. I can do it on all my Windows 10. You know, that's the only... It says forbidden. I forgot the exact words.
Well, did it get blocked?
Okay, I've always gone to lcrwriters.com. I've not gone to .org.
Okay, they both...
Oh, it takes you to the same place.
Yeah.
It is not secure. It's not HTTPS.
But, you know, my thought was it didn't have the right security protocol on XP anymore. Like it's trying to use MD5, and that's been deprecated and removed.
Right, but this has no security at all.
In fact, web browsers are...
I shouldn't
now,
say that out loud on the radio.
Well, web browsers are now shaming websites when they have no security. But in many cases, it doesn't need security. For Lilac City Writers, you're just looking at what people posted. It doesn't need security. But a lot of websites like the security, so they know they can't be snooped.
Right. Right. So unless you're logging in, you don't really... security is not as big a deal. But at any rate, the point here is that what browser are you using on XP?
Doesn't matter which one I use. So I'm thinking it's something in the computer, because it doesn't matter. I'll use Edge. I'll use Firefox. I'll use Chrome.
Yeah. Okay. You know, you can try Opera. You can try Dolphin. You can try any one of the old ones that might work. But to be utterly honest, there's nothing anybody can do for XP anymore.
Yeah.
There's no update files. There's no help. There's no nothing.
Right.
No support whatsoever.
Sorry.
What's that? Do a safe launch, safe boot with networking. If your browser has a safe boot or safe launch where it doesn't load any third-party extensions, that's something to try.
Okay.
Or turn off all your extensions.
Well, with Windows XP, if you hit the F8 key, you can you'll be presented with the menu, and it's just safe mode with networking.
That will,
right.
Yeah.
If you hit the F8 key while it's booting.
I think a lot of browsers, if you hold the Option or the Alt key while launching.
Yeah.
My machines are F8. I know I've been there a number of times.
Yeah, that's the whole Windows. But right. If you launch the browser often with the Alt key, then it doesn't load any extensions, and you get just a raw browser.
And that may do it.
I hadn't known.
Right. It may be that the browser itself is doing the... Well, except it happens on every browser.
And check your host file. Maybe something got put in the host file for like anti-spam or anti-tracking or...
Right.
And how did you do that?
But, well, there's a file... the location of host file in Windows.
Okay.
XP. That's a good question.
Windows 7 and earlier. Ooh. That just shows you what it is. It's probably in the Win32 directory. Yeah, System 32 drivers, right. Etsy. Hey, it's in the Etsy directory like it's supposed to be.
Like it's supposed to be. So C:\Windows\System32. /drivers/Etsy.
ETC, okay.
And I'll post this link about access forbidden messages. So things to try in any generic OS.
Okay.
Right. But honestly, Windows XP, not so much.
Well, I mean, it's still it's the computer that sits on the bed, lets me read stories. And
no, I get it. But, you know, you understand the risks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There is no security on it.
Not at all. I understand.
And et cetera, et cetera. So if you log into anywhere with that machine, I would immediately change all my passwords. And anytime I boot it up, I would change all my passwords, et cetera. You know all that.
Yep.
Okay. Hey,
support for Windows XP ended on April 8th, 2014. But they still give the instructions on Windows XP in this article.
Because, except
nice
for Microsoft, people just leave stuff on the web.
Yeah.
Microsoft actually takes down stuff for old operating systems.
Just disk space. What does it matter?
Our government is paying for Microsoft to keep government XP systems up to date.
Yep.
Since we are paying for it, we should be able to have access to those.
Well, that's a separate.
Yeah, good luck with that.
A separate time.
Extended
but
support. They pay per computer, and it gets more expensive every year.
And they keep paying it. Yep. We keep paying it. All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. You have a good day.
You too. Bye bye. Yeah. We're now at Windows 7. The same place we are with Windows XP. Support is just rarer, mm-hmm. and there are no fixes. So if you find a support document that tells you to do something from the keyboard, okay, that usually works. But if it says go find this file from Microsoft, it's gone.
Yeah, good luck.
you're done. That's just the way.
Unless somebody saved it somewhere else on the web.
Right, and then good luck finding it, and good luck trusting whoever that is.
Yeah, that it hasn't been hacked. And
Internet Archive, maybe.
What?
The Internet Archive, maybe.
The Internet Archive, maybe. Maybe, but they back up the web, they don't back up the programs.
Yeah.
So you may find a page with a link to a program, that's no guarantee the program will still be there to download.
Yep. And according to reports, the extended security costs is $50 per device in the first year, $100 per device in the second year, $200 per device in the third year. So it doubles every year per device. So if your company has 1,000 computers, that's $50,000 for the first year, $100,000 for the second year. Or paying for the software upgrade that you need to have upgraded because it still runs under XP.
Right. And Microsoft has finally calculated the pain point.
Yep.
Because they're happy to take your money.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is they want you on 10.
Yep.
So how much money is it worth them to keep you on Windows XP?
And then the fact that they're actually making these updates available to some customers.
And not others.
And not others is especially annoying.
Yep.
You know,
well, they don't want you.
They don't care.
Yeah, they've gone through all the time and effort to make this update, and we're not going to give it to you because you didn't pay us enough.
Right. And they don't want you on Windows XP or Windows 7 anymore.
All right.
So they're going to make it as annoying as possible for you to stay on that operating system.
Mm-hmm.
Like we saw at the top of the show, that security update is simply not available for Windows 7, even though the problem exists in Windows 7. Microsoft doesn't care anymore.
They're not supporting it.
So as people write exploits, and we're starting to see them in the wild, only machines they're really going to hit are people who can't be bothered to update and Windows 7.
This update may have been available for Windows 7 because it was before the January 14th deadline.
Oh, maybe, but they said no.
Oh, yeah? Because January 14th, the second Tuesday of January, was the last
this came out the 17th.
Windows 7 update.
They may have been holding it back.
So they didn't have to do it.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm peachy wonderful.
There you go.
Anyways, I just wanted to mention one program I use to back up Mozilla, almost anything Mozilla, is Moz Backup, M-O-Z Backup.
Yep.
wonderful.
Yep, and that only backs up Mozilla stuff, yeah. But it backs it up very well.
For
it
Firefox up, and Thunderbird,
because right.
They're both Mozilla, yeah. Yeah.
And I think it backs up some of their derivatives.
SeaMonkey.
Other projects, yeah.
Right.
SeaMonkey and stuff like that. And you can pick and choose with your browser what you want to bring in.
It'll back up your Netscape profile.
God bless them. I wonder whatever happened to my Netscape profile.
They'll let you pick and choose what you want to bring in. If you only want to bring in bookmarks and passwords,
right?
But you can bring in cash. You can bring in history.
Nice. That's a good point. I didn't think about a separate specific program for Thunderbird and Firefox, but Moz Backup will do that. And it is another back. It is a backup tool from Mozilla.
Although it does say it's no longer under development.
Yeah. It
works wonderful. It really does. You know, I wish it was still under development, but you know, for a free program.
Yep.
You know, it still works wonderfully easy. You don't have to go searching for anything. It finds your profile. It does it all. So it's a simple way to back up those two things. I've done it many a times transferring to other computers. So just thought I'd throw it out there to you.
Yeah, it's especially annoying when you get a new computer and all your stuff doesn't transfer over.
The
Firefox profile seems to be a random string of characters. So you can't find it. And if you do find it, when you put it on the new computer, it doesn't matter because that Firefox generated a new random string of characters.
Right. Here's an issue. It seems to be coming from a website called jessnapaka.com. Which may mean that person took it over.
He may have been the person that wrote it initially inside of
Well, but the
Mozilla.
Question is, who do you trust
yeah.
at this point, right? Because this is your email.
Yep.
And I don't know who this it's a guy named Pavel Tverkich.
Yeah, he's the original creator.
Yeah, all right. Well, if you trust him, you trust him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the original creator of the program. And I've been using it for a long time so far, no problems.
The source code is on GitHub.
And I do use Have You Been Pwned. I use it quite often because, of course, you want to stay up on those things. And so far, so good.
Right. And so you've done your due diligence and you trust it.
So far, so yeah. So far, so good. It doesn't mean somebody won't do something in the future. But I downloaded the initial one a long time ago and I just kept it. So I don't have to go looking for it. So I've had it for years.
Right. And it also doesn't look like it's been updated.
Yeah.
Since 2011.
So as long as Mozilla doesn't change their file structure, it'll keep working.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
thank
yeah.
you, guys.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.
Is that music in the background? Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple of minutes.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can call us, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Ooh. One other sad bit of news.
Yeah.
You know, we've had so many Radio Shacks and everything else closing and all that. I'm sad to report, you know, Goldcrest?
Yeah.
They're closing.
Oh, no.
He's retiring, one of the last few, for you folks that are unfamiliar, if you needed anything electronic, like even for your computer, different cords or, say, muffin fans and that type of stuff, you could go over to Goldcrest. It was so cool. He had so many different parts.
And if he didn't have it, he knew where to get it.
Yeah.
It was Playland.
And wiring and all this stuff. But sadly, he is, I have to go by there because it's right near where I work, that he's going out of business.
There's a picture from 1953 of Donald Gold in front of the racks of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, but he is going to probably be closing, he said once the building sells. Right now, so he's going to be open for a few months, but right now everything is on sale at half price.
Nice.
I mean, I was able to...
stock up on those cables.
Well, not only that, but he has this deal, you know, for your charger for your phones.
Segues into that.
Your little phone chargers. Those are just a simple 5-watt charger that plugs into your charger. You know, a little stand for your charger and that. He's got those on sale, you know, like $250.
Yep.
I mean, he's got everything. It's great price, you know, so. But it's sad that one of the few places left here in the city.
A true electronic store.
Yeah. Right. That, like Radio Shack, you could go for all these other parts and everything else. They're going by the wayside.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Speaking of items going by the wayside, the European Union, or EU, is revamping plans that could force smartphone makers such as Apple to share the same charging method. European policymakers want to make life easier for consumers as well as to reduce electronic waste across the 28-country region. As a result, they are looking at introducing a single universal charging cable. This would be particularly relevant for Apple given its different charging options, including the Lightning cable. Old chargers generate more than 51,000 metric tons of electronic waste per year, according to the European Parliament. Lawmakers want one single charger that fits phones, tablets, e-books, and any other portable device. Apple's Lightning connector cable, which is used to charge and sync different devices, would therefore be at risk. Unsurprisingly, Apple believes that the EU's plan would hurt innovation. Apple, of its own choice, has already stopped using Lightning on the 2019 version of the iPad, moving to the USB-C port, used on MacBooks, USB-C, and micro USB, and also used on Android devices and Chromebooks, and pretty much every new device uses USB-C anyway. This has been a long-term objective of the industry. Most newer Android devices already use the same charging system, so it would have an impact on Apple more than anyone else. The EU pushed for a single charging mechanism back in 2014. At the time, the European Commission, the EU's executive arm, tried to encourage smartphone makers to develop a solution among themselves. However, the voluntary scheme did not achieve what the European policymakers wanted, and they are now looking at putting it into law. Smartphone developers, including Apple and Samsung, have also been putting out devices that are charged wirelessly. Although the technology is still in its early stages, this is most likely the future of charging. And in general, again, if you've got a wireless charger, that still has to connect to a cord somewhere, and they will want that to be USB-C as well. So, how many different charging cables do you have? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
One of the articles I read about this topic was in 2009, when the EU started talking about this, there were 30 different charger cables common among all manufacturers. Back in the early flip phone days, every manufacturer had a different
cable. Different style.
In fact, sometimes the same manufacturer would have different cables for different phones. Micro USB sort of caught on for a while, but now switching to USB-C. USB-A lasted for 20 years.
Yep.
And so hopefully USB-C will last for 20 years, but eventually there'll be something better.
USB-C is too easy. You kids today have it too easy. We had to put every plug in three times to get it to work.
Try it the first way, it didn't work. You turn it over, try it the second way, it didn't work. You turn it over, try it the third way, and it works.
And it works every time, but it takes those three to do it.
Reversible connectors, and there's more pins on it. That's one of the reasons that Apple didn't switch to micro USB in the beginning, is that they needed more pins than, I think it was five pins that USB allowed.
Right.
And when Apple switched from Lightning or from 30-pin to Lightning, there was a horrible outcry in the Apple community about everyone needing to buy new cables or buy new dongles. And so they've been a little more timid in switching to from Lightning to USB-C lately.
Yep.
And the story at the time is that they were going to use USB-C, but it wasn't ready yet. So they had to make their own.
And now, of course, if the European Union with 28 nations says no more Lightning,
well,
Lightning will essentially go away because it's not going to be profitable for Apple to continue to make it just for the United States.
It probably will in the next couple of years anyway as Apple shifts the rest of their products to USB Type-C.
Right.
But there was a loophole in the earlier regulation that in Europe, Apple puts a USB adapter in the box. So the phone has Lightning, but there's a USB adapter, and so that counts.
Okay, which you can't use, by the way.
Well, in older computers when they all had USB. Now pretty much all new computers are coming with USB Type-C. Some of them have, is that an A and?
I have an A and a C.
An A and a C.
On both sides, actually.
And if you wonder what happened to B, that's what's on the printer end. The peripherals have a B.
Right, right. but now hold on a second. If I have a Lightning connector with a USB or USB-C, but my computer doesn't charge through USB, what is the point of that connector?
Good point.
Your computer would have a USB port on it that has a charging capability. But
would it?
We're starting to see a lot of devices now don't come with higher power charging.
Right.
And so the other side of that is that you use the charger that the phone came with. My big concern in all the waste that the article mentioned is that there's a lot of companies making really crappy chargers.
Really crappy chargers.
That, you know, you can buy them online for $5 when, you know, an OEM one is $20. And it breaks in a month, you throw it away and buy a new one.
If it works
that
and
long.
Doesn't set your phone on fire.
One thing I just got, it's a strip, and it's on a nice angle. It has four USB 3.0 on it, and then it has four charging units, rapid chargers.
Nice.
And the other feature is you can turn it's got buttons that you can turn them on, turn them off.
Oh, you're dangerous with buttons.
Yeah, I know.
You are.
But one thing, though, going with computers and as far as charging and that, I wish other manufacturers would adopt the Mac as far as the charging, that it just breaks away. And that is magnetic.
That's gone now, too.
The MagSafe adapter
is
gone.
That's what I mean. That was the best thing that came out since sliced bread was that magnetic. Yeah. It's so easy, people wouldn't destroy their machines because that's what they're doing. They get up, and all of a sudden they forget that it's plugged in, and they
yank it away,
and then all of a sudden destroy that connector. And it's a simple connector. Oh, yeah, it's right there. Yeah, but to replace it, you have to take the whole left part, the bottom part, apart.
And then desolder.
Yeah, to get it at the underside of the motherboard.
There are some third-party companies that make a magnetic adapter for your cable. But
right.
I have seen that the USB-C connector does unplug a little easier than the previous generation of power cords do. So when you do yank your cord, there's a better chance it's going to come unplugged by itself.
You can get one from Amazon for $25.
Is that the Griffin one?
It's got the USB-C that plugs into your computer, and then a USB-C adapter for that. So that's actually pretty nice.
Yeah, but that was
$25, but it's still pretty nice.
That was the best thing they came up with.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I like this rapid charger because, you know, if I want to charge up my cell phone or other devices like my tablet or that, I can plug it in and, boom, it does a rapid charge. You know, and I can have multiple devices.
Yep.
Once it's charged, I just hit the button and I can leave it there.
Sure, because it's turned off now.
Yeah.
You don't want to overcharge.
Right.
No, I get that.
Here's three for $10.
Oh, send me that link.
$12.
Send me that link, absolutely. three for $10.
Because it works with any USB Type C device now. So my computer charges with USB C. The phones charge with USB C.
Right. I put one on here. This thing, over 2 years ago,
the USB-C.
Yeah. Because when Rob hooked that charger, what's this for? I says, well, my phone, the Pixel, takes C. Oh, okay. And that's the way things are going. Either it's the B or the C.
Right. Now my phone, both of my Chromebooks take USB-C, but my tablet, which is, I think, 35 or 40 years old, still takes A. And my watch, I think, takes micro.
One thing I wish they'd do, and this is an idea for somebody out there. All right, you're developing these cords, okay? In the middle of it, or up towards one end, put an on-off switch.
Yeah.
Little button, a little toggle switch that you could turn it on and off.
You know how many tech support calls that would generate? My computer won't charge. Have you looked at the on-off switch?
Oh, I had... wait a minute. No, I had that back in the 80s.
Yeah.
I had a guy, I fixed his computer, took it back for him, and all of a sudden he calls me up. I thought you said you fixed this darn thing. Yes, sir. It's just turn it on and should go. I've turned it on and nothing's happening. I said, well, tell you what, you're only a few minutes away. I'll go over. You turned it on. You flipped the switch on the side and turned it on. I do like I always did. I turned it on and it's not coming up. I go over to his house. I look at the side of the, because it was an IBM PC with the dual floppies. I look over on the side, the red little button, flick that up. All of a sudden it comes on.
Yeah.
He had it. That commanding station.
Oh, yeah. But if you don't turn on the devices themselves, nothing's going to happen. We, at RIT, we bought a bunch of laptops at one point that had an on-off switch on the side.
Yep.
And it was exactly, and in fact, one of my Chromebooks has that now. And it's at exactly the place where you would carry it.
Mm-hmm.
If you carry it on the side.
On and off, yep.
And so people would get somewhere and that would be off. So they'd open the laptop, nothing.
Mark, laptop's broken.
Remember the Wi-Fi switches that used to be there?
And that was the other one. The
save
Wi-Fi, same
Wi-Fi
idea.
Off.
They're on the side where you grab it and carry it. And so people were turning off Wi-Fi all the time.
I remember, I watched a YouTube video yesterday about early computers had a physical key lock on them. These are the little barrel keys.
Sure. Well,
because companies were so scared about people coming along and using the computer. Or stealing the computer without permission, that they put a key lock on it. There were even a couple of aftermarket add-ons. Remember the giant red switch?
You know,
what's the big red switch on the side do?
Yep.
There was an aftermarket add-on that put a mechanical cover on that red switch with a key lock on it. So you couldn't use the computer. You couldn't open the computer and steal the RAM out of it. Nowadays, they're just glued together, and you can't get them in anyway.
But we had that at RIT in the labs. We had them all wired up with fiber so that if somebody took one, we'd get a warning.
An alarm.
Every year, I would get one of my brand new students to go down to the labs and take out a computer and bring it upstairs just to see if the lab monkeys would stop them.
Uh-huh. And did they?
It was spotty. It was spotty. Mm-hmm.
Positive or negative?
Both. Yeah. It was spotty.
Okay.
So
equal.
They caught him,
equal distribution.
Yeah, exactly. But they got better at it. We did more training and they got better at it. But yeah, you know, if the reality is, if you look like you know what you're doing, people leave you alone.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And there are just places where you can't have that. That's the whole idea behind social engineering.
Especially if you walk around with a clipboard or a bunch of files in your hand.
Clipboard, absolutely. Nobody bothers the person with the clipboard.
Yeah.
That's always been true. But you gotta be aware and you gotta be careful.
And you gotta know some gobbledygook.
Or if you just walk around, you know, walk in and look positive, like you know where you're going and boom.
Have you tried reversing the polarity of the neutral Heisenberg compensator?
There you go. But yeah, exactly.
Heisenberg may have slept here.
Heisenberg what?
Heisenberg may have slept here.
May have. Exactly. But yeah, so you want to be... the problem is that nowadays, most people think, well, I'm in the safety of my own home.
Yep.
There's nothing that can happen. Well,
you may be, but those little tendrils in your computer go everywhere.
They go everywhere, and you want to be careful of that. I've known people who had their stuff stolen at a party. Not the computer itself, but the data in it, because they don't put a password on it. They leave it on all the time, yada, yada, yada.
And they go to some sites where there's what they call hover ads. You can just hover over a spot mm-hmm. and pick up spyware.
Right.
And then they wonder, I only went to that site for a minute. And I thought it wasn't right, so I got out of there. It doesn't matter. Once you hit there, and your mouse goes anywhere near that, bam, you can get some spyware.
And it doesn't have to be a dirty site anymore. No. We used to say stay off the porn sites and pirate sites, but now legitimate websites are getting hit with fake ads all mm-hmm. the time.
Oh, yeah. Right. You've got to pay attention.
Well, I never click on the ad. You don't have to click on it. Just displaying it is enough.
Yeah. Watch the websites where you're going, folks, and make sure that it's got the HTTPS.
Right. For the security.
Guys are buying security certs now, too. So.
Yep. That leads into our last story.
Ooh, what a segue.
And very, very well done. You may have noticed that Google search results look a little different this week.
I hate them.
That's because of an effort aimed at clarifying sources of information, according to Google. Google has added small logos to each search result that appear when someone enters a search query on their desktop. For example, a CNN or Fox News logo appears next to results that comes from their respective news sites. A big, bold ad logo appears next to advertisements. But the logos show up for each search result, not just news and ads. The company said the new look is an expansion of an announcement it made last summer, which stated it would introduce the new look to mobile devices. This week it launched the new look on desktops as well. The new look comes as Google and its parent company Alphabet face scrutiny from regulators and the public for struggling to contain misinformation. Calls for remedies have grown louder as the 2020 presidential elections grow closer, and the company faces a number of probes, including antitrust, related to its search business. The format puts a site's brand front and center, helping searchers better understand where information is coming from, more easily scan results, and decide what to explore, Google said. They actually tweeted, which is where everybody gets information now. This new design allowed us to add more action buttons and helpful previews to search results cards, all while giving you a better sense of the web's content with clear attribution back to the source. So did you even notice the change? Give us a call, 585. Well, we don't have time.
Yeah, no.
If we don't have time, we'd be done.
Matter of fact, the person that is calling in right now.
Yeah, sorry. It's too late. It's just simply too late.
Like you always say,
call early. Call often. Exactly right.
I started noticing this and go, what am I at, Bing? No, I'm at Google. What's going on here?
Yeah, but it's a new thing that they're doing.
See, apparently I'm the only one that reads the link.
Yeah,
and
no.
I know where I'm going. I don't need the icon.
Yeah, me too. But everybody else, the icon at least should help until we become so used to it that we don't. Oh, I wonder if my icon shows up.
The thing that's even worse, and you often don't see it, is when you click on a link in a Google result, what it does is it adds a tracking redirect kind of thing. So Google knows what you clicked on. If you look at your address bar really quick, you'll see a Google page come up with some random looking characters before it takes you to the page you really wanted to go to.
If you search for Ask Nick, my face comes up.
All right. So
I'm very excited.
It must be using your favicon.
Yeah, it is. It's important to know where you're going on the internet and to care one way or the other. That's just Google's way of helping. All right, that music tells us we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I do apologize to the people who called in right at the end of the show. You got to call in earlier. But hold your questions. We'll be back in next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. You have been listening to 2 hours. 2 hours of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to each other, and we will see you in just 166 hours.